On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we're watching Saving Mr. Banks, starring the only man I'd like to be quarantined with, Tom Hanks.
Saving Mr. Banks is a 2013 period drama film directed by John Lee Hancock.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
What's up, Hanks heads? Welcome back to a very special quarantine edition of Talkin' Tom, the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and then we talk about them.
Hello. I've had months to prep something to say there and I did nothing.
No, and it's good because now there's an even bigger delay in between.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, so this is good. My name's Josie.
My name is Daniel.
And we are two friends in isolation who watch Tom Hanks movies. This has been a minute since we watched one together.
It is. Which is weird, because you'd think with all this alleged free time, we would just be watching movies. But that is not the case.
Yeah, life's a little bit different now. So for context, I'm sure everyone listening to this episode when it comes out, but just for posterity, it is April 2019. The two of us. 2020. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. So it's 2020. We are practicing social distancing. Our entire city and state is on like a mandatory lockdown, basically. So we're all in our homes just living at home.
Vibing. Yeah.
It's nuts.
How are you enjoying your... What are you using your safer at home time to accomplish, if anything?
Well, I started fostering a cat, a little one-eyed sweetie named Haley, and she's been my biggest focus lately. She just, like, she's so shy and sweet, so I've been taking care of her and teaching her how to be a more social cat. It's been very rewarding. Other than that, just baking, man.
That's pretty great, though. That's something you love to do anyways, so now you just have, like, a lot of time to do it.
Mm-hmm. I do. And there was a flower shortage in Los Angeles for a while, so I lucked out. My neighbor bought me some a couple days ago. But for a while, everyone was baking bread, and I was like, you fuckers. I got real gatekeepy about sourdough, I'm going to be honest.
That's fair. I always have enjoyed cooking, but I've really gotten into cooking. But I've yet to be able to find flour, so my baking, new baking projects have been very slim to none.
Oh. But...
I did make marmalade, though.
Yes, I was going to ask you.
It's very important.
That's something that I did want to talk to you about. I've been following your Instagram and noticing that you, you're becoming much more of a pioneer, and I'm very impressed.
Thank you. I've been in like a very like a creative just a wall. I've had zero interest in anything like writing or I'm finishing a project right now, but even that I'm like, hey, what's the rush? Because you know theaters and festivals are closed, so I'm trying to find new things to like, and cooking's been the main one because you have nothing but time, and so I have a new appreciation for the process of it, because it used to seem like something, especially after a long day, that I didn't want to do. I'm like, it takes forever. In reality, it doesn't. So I'm sort of thrilled about that.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you've been able to, like, have any kind of creative output. I haven't.
I think that's completely fair. My creative output is I watch Bon Appetit and I cook things from that, so...
Oh.
And I'm growing a beard because I, you know, why not?
I've always wondered this. No one sees me. Are beards, like, itchy?
They're very itchy for the first 2 weeks or so. And they hit a point where one day you wake up and all of a sudden it's, like, soft and it's nice.
Okay.
It's weird, though, because when you shave it off, it's, you look bizarre to yourself for a few days.
Oh, yeah. Like a little baby.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Have we done a podcast since you got married?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God.
I did do that too. Well, we got married somehow, like, literally a week before things went to hell, so...
That is so crazy.
So my wife and I, we got married on February 29th, and then a week later, things started to kind of heat up, and then a week after that, we went into... I guess 2 weeks after that, but really a week later, it started to get really bad, and then a week after that, we went into lockdown.
Oh my god.
So, and she works in the event industry, so she has really seen the... I mean, we work in production, so we've also seen it, but seeing every wedding, every party has been canceled, moved online, moved indefinitely, because there's no clear indicator of sort of what to expect going forward. So,
it's nuts. It's
been a, yeah.
Oh. Well, the ceremony was incredible. I don't even know if I told you this. I cried the entire time. I didn't think I was going to, but the minute I saw you in your tux, I started crying.
Yeah.
I just felt so like, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about all this, but it's just fucking, I don't get invited to a lot of weddings. It was very special.
It's very weird. I come from Oklahoma, so there's sort of a, people get married a lot younger in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a lot of weddings growing up. And Rachel and I had always discussed, like, we want to wait till we can really do what we want to do in terms of the ceremony. Not that it needs to be big, but you do have a little bit of big because we are both from out of state. So there's family and friends from out of state to bring. But also just, like, we want to do what we wanted. So I don't love cake. I like cake. Not my favorite dessert. So I was like, we want to do ice cream sandwiches. And I love really great 5-course meals, sure, but I'd rather have pizza. So we sort of just made up. We wanted to make every decision because they're very expensive, and especially in Los Angeles, we were trying to be the most cost-effective thing we could do.
Wow.
And somehow we timed it where the world shut down after, so.
Yeah, the timing is truly impeccable. Yeah, it was a beautiful ceremony. Thank you for letting me be part of it.
Thank you for being there.
I looked very good at your wedding, I will say.
You were killing it. You had, like, photo. People kept all of the photos. We haven't gotten all the photos back, but there must be some. But we saw, like, you did, like, some photo shoots, and our mutual friend Jericho killing it with the photography game.
Yeah. It was important to make sure that the wedding was mostly about me and how hot I am, so I did manage to achieve that.
That's fair. It's also the strangest thing for me was seeing, because I'm from Oklahoma, went to school in Chicago, live in LA now, having those three, and then spent some time in New York, a lot of friends from New York, seeing all of those worlds collide was like an Avengers movie where it's all of these people from the last 30 years of my life in one space. Very weird.
Probably overwhelming, I can imagine.
Yeah. People kept telling us, oh, the day flies by, and it does, because you just have to talk the entire time. Everyone wants to catch up, but there's, you know, 150 people that you have to, like, catch up with, so it's exhausting just to play catch up. And then you feel bad because people flew out here and you can only talk to them for 5 minutes, because then it's nuts. Wow. Respect to everyone who pulls it off and the people that work in it. Whew. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would love to talk about I want to do a whole fucking episode about all the cute little details that you guys had. It was very sweet. You put a little screenplay together as your program. That made me cry. Your vows. Holy shit. Daniel, you are a writer. It's incredible. Oh, so sweet. Someday I will find a love like that. To make this about me, someday I will find that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll come do a photo shoot at your wedding. It'll be perfect. Awesome. I'll wear the same dress.
Okay. Yeah, you can borrow it.
Yeah. I'll have to make some major altercations. But altercations. Jesus.
You can do a fight with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you want to talk about the movie?
Yeah, I guess we should talk about the movie. The people are here and they're like, what are you guys doing? We don't care about you. But they do. I hope the people that are listening to this are craving that content. They'd be like, what has been happening?
Yeah, if they haven't given up by now. Today, we watched a movie called Saving Mr. Banks, which is a very sweet little family movie that's currently available on Netflix.
And Disney Plus.
Oh, is it on Disney Plus too?
Yeah.
I should have put that on our social. Whatever. You want to tell us what the movie's about?
Sure. The movie is about a woman named P.L. Travers, who wrote a book, a series, called about Mary Poppins. And the movie specifically is about Walt Disney, played by Tom Hanks, trying to adapt. He wants to adapt her book into a musical, and it's and they bring her in for the creative process of it, and it's about the trials and tribulations of trying to make Mary Poppins.
Which is kind of not what you would think the movie would be about.
Yeah, I think that, from what I remember of the trailer, it really sells that this is about Tom Hanks' Disney, and again, trickery.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much.
It's kind of a theme in his, when he plays these big iconic characters. Have you seen this movie before?
I had not. This was my first time.
Okay. What about Mary Poppins? When's the last time you watched Mary Poppins?
I actually watched... Well, I watched Mary Poppins right before the sequel came out. So I guess 2 years...
Okay.
2 Christmases ago?
Yeah. I never saw the sequel.
That's okay.
Yeah, I feel good about it.
As a kid, though, I was obsessed with Mary Poppins. Because I carried umbrellas everywhere I went. I wanted to be able to fly. And maybe I'll send a picture we can post. But I just used to jump off of things with an umbrella. And the umbrellas would break. And I guess my mom eventually had to put a stop to it because I was getting braver and braver of the height I was jumping off of. So it was like the couch and then the counter and then the back of my dad's pickup truck and then maybe like the first branch of a tree. So at some point, it was taken from me.
And did you really think you could fly?
Yeah, I wanted, as a kid, anything Superman, Mary Poppins, any hero that could fly... I just wanted that. The way that she could move around, I was like, I want that. I don't know what I wanted to do with it, but I wanted that ability.
That's so cute. I didn't really watch Mary Poppins when I was a little kid, but I went to musical theater camp when I was a lot younger, which I'm sure I've spoken about on the show before. And one of the big solos that I got, one of my last years, was that I played Mary Poppins. And I got to sing Whoa. Spoonful of Sugar, and they had a British accent, and it was a really big, exciting moment for me.
Is there a recording of this?
Probably. I remember that I had really wanted it to be so the theater camp that I went to, it was mostly just like everybody performs a bunch of medleys, and mm-hmm. if you get a solo, it was either because you'd been at camp long enough that they were like, you're paying a lot of money to be here, you should get a solo, or you were like, really good. I don't know which one it was for me, but it was a huge honor that I got a solo because I hadn't had a solo in the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And I wanted to surprise my parents by just when they came to watch the big performance that I would just like suddenly have a big huge solo that they wouldn't know about. But this kid ruined it in the elevator. He like got into the elevator with me and my family and started calling me Mary Poppins in the elevator, and I got so mad at him. He like ruined my whole surprise. It was
wow,
super unfair.
What a turd.
Yeah. I mean, I shouldn't have, like, there are just other things that are more important, but a 15-year-old Josie was
pretty turdy.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's
what did you have you rewatched it recently?
No, I want to though. Okay. I love Julie Andrews.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting to rewatch. I think it holds up pretty well. It's very long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is weird because as a kid, I had no concept of time. But I also just like it because it's like about this woman who like comes in to like overthrow capitalism, basically.
Yeah.
And I dig that.
I also...
Which is very funny in terms of what Disney maybe represents now.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I feel like you and I were texting about this. That some movies are just like so long, like kind of when I watch a movie that I don't like, it's mostly because it's been too long, like the yeah. movie is too long. But you were saying you will watch like any movie if it's like 90 minutes, it's too short.
I have a weird thing. I love a tight 90 movie, but I also love like a 3 hour movie. But for some reason, sometimes like an in between, like a 2:20, doesn't feel right.
That feels weird.
I cannot describe why. I mean, 3 hours is 40 extra minutes of that. But something, I don't know. It works for me.
Oh, my God. Wait, one other thing I just remembered. I really want to watch Requiem for a Dream, which I've never seen before.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to put that out there, that that's something that I'm going to watch soon.
Yeah, that's, you should do that alone in your room and then just live with that in quarantine for a few days.
Do I really need to be alone? I was thinking of watching it with my roommate. We both are like, no, it's going to fuck us up. I don't know anything about it. Just
then you have someone to talk to about with it.
Is it gross?
It's pretty gross. Not like, it's more like disturbing gross, not like people getting cut open. Just sort of like what's happening is disturbing. It does not make you feel awful.
Cool.
But I think it's one of those, like, you'll watch it and maybe never watch it again.
That's what I've heard.
But it'll live with you forever.
Okay.
How we got there from Mary Poppins, two opposite spectrums. But maybe that awfulness is how P.L. Travers felt through this process.
Yes. So, there's kind of two timelines happening in the movie. One is just the general present day storyline with Disney trying to get P.L. Travers to sign away the rights to her book. And then there's also her past that she's been reliving through her experience with Mr. Disney, where we learn about her father and her time in Australia, which I also, one of the first scenes in the movie is them in like Victorian Australia, which I just had never thought of as a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Like, who knew Australia looked like that? Who knew Australia existed in, like, the 1900s?
Looks beautiful from the shots that are definitely not filmed there, but...
So, what were your first impressions of P.L. Travers?
She's very standoffish and abrasive and generally unpleasant in her characterization here.
She's hard to like.
Yeah, for a long time. And they sort of set up, because when it starts, you sort of learn that for like 20 years, Disney has been badgering this woman for her book rights. And she said no. Because she's worried with what they'll do to Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
But then she runs into financial trouble because she hasn't written a new book. And her assistant or something reminds her that, or maybe her manager reminds her that... about the Disney deal and the stipulations, and her two stipulations that she once agreed to is she wants no animate, she can't be animated, and she has to have complete script approval, which Disney agrees to, and then she goes to LA.
Those are two kind of like crazy asks.
Yeah, for the 1960s Disney, no animation, like that's sort of their game.
Yeah.
And script control is pretty wild.
That seems like really... I definitely know that would never happen now.
I respect it. I respect that she went for it and would not accept anything but a yes to that. But getting that would be insane now, I think.
Mm-hmm. And then what are your impressions of Walt Disney?
Well, he's just lovely in this, which is, I think, intentional. Partly because it's played by Tom, who, just to take a pause and say, this performance is really cool because I don't think, rather than doing a dialect and sort of impression of Walt Disney, he does like a, he just takes the, like that warm, winning personality that we associate with Walt Disney that just sort of draws you in. That, the type of personality that you're like, oh, I get why people would want to work with this person.
Mm-hmm. It's like a person, like it's like a whole vibe that he presents of just like a kind, good listener. However, he does like kind of misrepresent himself.
Yeah, he's definitely someone who is, which it surprised me, is one of the few surprises in this for me, that Disney sort of insinuates that he was a little bit manipulative to get his ways. I didn't say that word right. Manipulative to get his ways.
Yeah, which for it being a Disney property and like a Disney film, it is interesting that they kind of pulled the curtain back a little bit.
Yeah, they kind of tricked me because I had heard things about this but never really read into it. So when that happened, I was like, oh, maybe they're going to be, maybe this would be kind of an honest look at this creation process, because I know it was sort of tumultuous, and but we'll get to that. And you were talking about they spend not half the time, but a good chunk of the time in the past, mm-hmm. with her, with P.L. Travers' childhood, sort of how she invented this character, and her father, who's played by Colin Farrell,
mm-hmm.
who's an alcoholic. And I understand what they want from that and the purpose of that, but it's made in that way that sort of just, that was, every time it cut to the past, I was like, ugh, I don't care.
Really?
Yeah.
I liked that stuff more, because I actually really liked Colin Firth in this. I was kind of surprised. Wait, that's, it's not
Colin Firth. Farrell. Yeah.
I love Colin Firth in everything. Both
beautiful men. Yeah.
Colin Farrell in this, it was just kind of, it was fun, like, trying to understand what the family dynamic was going to be, because at first you're like, oh, he's a cool dad, and the mom sucks. Like, you're like, this mom's yeah. such a wet blanket. And then you realize, like, this poor mom just, like, I don't know, the little girl is so cute. And clearly P.L. Travers has a lot of unresolved trauma that she is working through. It's too bad she's lived with this for so long and hasn't been able to get the help that she needs.
Yeah.
And that just, like, really spoke to me as a, as, like, a storytelling element to kind of understanding her.
I think that's really cool, though, because that's something that didn't stand out to me. Like, I couldn't find an emotional connection in it. But then you say that, and I get why that makes it sound super involved and important to it, whereas I, maybe just because I was viewing it under the eyes of quarantine, didn't read it like that. So I think with that in mind, it definitely plays very much into that.
Mm-hmm. I just kept being like, oh God, what's going to happen to this girl at this circus, or like whatever that family, what was that big thing they were at? Like a carnival?
Carnival, yeah.
Like, oh God, what's going to happen at this bank? His dad's going to do something. Oh, and the pears. Oh, you just knew the pears.
It's one of those things where you, since we're flashing back, we know that only bad can come out of this, because it just keeps getting worse and worse. So every time we cut back, I just get up and like, okay, a little bit worse, a little bit worse, a little bit worse.
Yeah. But in present day, we had quite a few people that were involved in the storytelling. Paul Giamatti plays a, like a chauffeur.
Yeah, he's like her driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Paul Giamatti, so I'm always down when he appears on screen. And he's lovely. He's just like the most, like, I want to be his buddy.
He's nothing like the character he plays in Big Fat Liar, which is the only other reference yeah. point I have. BJ Novak plays one of the songwriters. Surprising characterization.
Yeah.
And then that.
As a note, interesting, because In as history is told, I believe Disney was very against anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And so BJ Novak, being Jewish descent and having been in other movies about the Jewish people, kind of interesting to cast him in that. Never spoken, but I was like, oh, interesting.
That's something that I don't know enough about, that I probably should have read about before we started talking about the movie. But just, like, I know there's a lot of stuff about Walt Disney that is just really sad and bad and not to be praised, that, of course, we don't cover in this movie. Like, that would be really weird for that to come up. Like, his, like, racism and stuff would not make sense to talk about in this movie, but it does kind of cloud the experience a little.
Yeah, especially coming from someone, since Disney, the company, is making it about Disney in the past.
I read some reviews online that were like, oh, they really, like, make Walt Disney look like such a good guy, and then, like, other comments being like, well, what do you expect, like, how would that ever fit into the story? Which I hear. I can honor and hold space for that.
Yeah. And I do think, well, I was sort of researching before this that, I mean, everything is rumors, and I'm sure people have you know, come forward and said stuff, but it's a lot of like, controversies that are grounded in the people that have worked with him. There's a lot more, I mean, people to look into stuff. There's some other wild ones of stuff he was potentially involved in, including like attending a pro-Nazi organization meeting, and he also hosted Leni Riefenstahl, who was the Nazi propaganda filmmaker during World War II.
Oh, boy.
Gave her a tour of Disney Studios. And then there was a bunch. Disney has a bunch of animation, some of their older films, which many of which are not easy to find to watch, have racist overtones, and they have black stereotypes that they're using to forward things. I even read that there's Song of the South, which is sort of the most famous, most infamous Disney property that is rooted in perpetuating black stereotypes. The Disney ride Splash Mountain is based on that, so the characters in it are from it, obviously shifted and not to include anything, but there's some really interesting stuff in that. It's interesting, I keep saying interesting, but there's sort of, Disney has this platform with owning Marvel and Star Wars, and they're very actively trying to be progressive in the public eye. You know, you have female leads in Star Wars, you have Avengers Endgame has a shot of every woman in the Marvel Universe, even though it took, you know, till 2018 to get a female-led movie. Mm-hmm. So there's scrutiny on them to push forward progressively, but they have such a platform with how big they are to be proactive about it instead, and I hope that they utilize that more, because they do. They have a very interesting past, and they could really set a precedent for having a great future if they took a little more action.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that I mean, just to shift gears, sorry if it feels like I'm, anyway, something that I love about old-timey movies, like, or what movies that show like an older part of history that I love, is the, like, first of all the space in that writing room and that where they were coming up with the music. I thought the whole, like, Disney Studios, which are in Burbank, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty. But the thing I loved the most was the decorations in the Beverly Hills hotel room that P.L. Travers was staying in. Ugh. It's like that whole style just, like, was here, and then we got over it, and now that exact, like, vibe is back again, and it's exactly how I want to decorate my apartment.
Yeah, I really think Rachel should, my wife, should work in production design, because that sort of stuff, that has to be, from a technical perspective, the most satisfying thing to get involved with, any period piece, like, yes, mm-hmm. I'm in.
Rachel would be very good at that.
I think she should do it. Rachel, if you're listening... I won't tell you in person. You have to listen to...
You have to make it to, like, minute 40 of the podcast.
So there's sort of... The movie kind of... I sort of took it... I mean, not took issue... I guess I did take issue with it. There's sort of this, like, hour-long chunk that's just sort of the same thing over and over. It's these writers trying to make the movie, P.L. Travers pushing back at them for things they want to change, and Walt Disney occasionally coming in to be like, but we're trying to do this, and then disappearing for like 20 minutes at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of learn everything they want you to know about P.L. Travers in the flashbacks. She doesn't really make any character progress until really the end of the movie, when there's finally like a half hour chunk where she becomes sort of likable.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would argue that the scene where she, like, freaks out about her dad having a mustache, mm-hmm. and, like, where she's, like, freak. We learned so much about her in that moment, and that was when the shift for me happened with her, where I was, at first I'm like, God, this woman sucks. Like, everything anyone tries to do for her in the movie, she's, like, just so shitty about, like, and then she just starts to become very human and kind of, like, see the facade is like cracking a little, obviously not a little, yeah. In a major huge way, it's like falling apart.
where she almost has the same, she kind of has her own defense system and character the same way Disney does.
Mm-hmm.
We should also pause and say Emma Thompson, chef's kiss.
She's so good. That is...
I'm rewatching Harry Potter with Rachel, and I forgot that she's one of the professors in it, and again, just a gift.
She's Madame Trelawney, right?
Yeah.
Oh, she's so good. And she's in, well, she's in Love Actually, but I don't really like that movie that much, even though I know everybody loves it. Isn't she in Much Ado About Nothing, too?
I don't know.
I feel like she is. She's so good. Oh, she's just, like, such a classy, like, elegant person.
When I think of her, I think of Stranger Than Fiction with her and Will Ferrell.
Oh!
Where she's the writer.
I haven't seen that in ages.
It's really good.
I need to watch it.
It's real good. Was her freak out about her dad and the facial hair later in the movie, or am I misremembering, because it's been two weeks since I watched
been.
It?
It was like, I would say the halfway point. It was before we started to see the turn in the past of her dad being like a drunk and stuff.
You spend some time in the past sort of seeing these moments where her dad's alcoholism getting him into trouble, where he like almost loses his job in front of her at the bank, then the bank lets him keep it, but almost like a pity move, just like, how could you let your kids see this? And then he gives a speech about some land development or something that he's involved with the bank, and is too drunk to deliver the speech and falls off the stage, and not good. Not good dad moves.
Not good dad moves. And I think something that they kind of touch on too in the story is that she feels like she's done her dad a disservice by the way that she's portrayed him in the books, because her dad is kind of I don't know what the name of the guy in Mary Poppins is, what the dad's name is, but like, he's the one who works at the bank. He's the one who only cares about money.
He's Mr. Banks in Mary Poppins.
Oh, fucking duh. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So stupid. Sorry. so embarrassing.
I had the same thing where I had a moment where I was like, why is this called Saving Mr. Banks again? And then
I literally was just thinking that was what Tom Hanks' character's name was this whole time, even though I know he's Walt Disney. That is so dumb. Yeah, so she's like rewriting her book basically because she feels like she's disappointed him.
Yeah, that is sort of the interesting turning point for why she obsesses over this creative control, because this sort of fantasy children's book is actually this deeply personal thing. And if I think she knows with Disney's sort of presence in the movie world that this is going to be millions of people's introduction to the work, and she wants it to represent what she always wanted it to. I think that's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think if there are any other like big moments, or we should just start talking about the end now.
Well, I was thinking they go to Disneyland.
Oh yeah,
which is just cool. I don't know. I can't remember any specific things that came out.
They go on the carousel.
Yeah, which is Disney's favorite ride.
Uh huh.
Well, I think, and it sort of sparks. Doesn't it kind of spark her? She finds inspiration in it.
A little.
Is that the moment before she comes back? Or is that... That's sort of after that she starts to actually work with them, with the songwriters and the screenwriters. And that goes swimmingly until the animation sequence thing comes in and there's another fight, which she ends up going back to London.
Yes.
It's very funny to try and piece this back together.
What did you think about
seeing... detective novel.
Old-timey London... I mean, we just saw, like, her house, but...
Yeah, I adore the UK, so any time spent there in her flat, I would love... Can I live there?
Yeah, I'm, like, actually considering moving to, like, the English seaside.
Yeah, like Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton, fucking Cotswold, I don't know. I don't even know if that's a town. But...
That's all I want to do is make a few successful films so that I can live part-time in the UK.
I don't even need to do anything successful, man. I'll just go there and live in a tent.
Yeah.
Do
it up. Get a van. Get one of those cool vans.
Somewhere with, like, I don't know, universal healthcare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be cool.
It would be cool. She gets the flashback to the big speech because she's on the carousel.
Yeah.
Because there's a carousel at that weird carnival that she's at. That weird fucking Australian carnival.
And then after she leaves, we get a flashback where we learn that P.L. Travers is not her real name. Disney secretary finds this out, and Disney does because of how they're billing her or sending her money. But P.L. Travers is a pen name based on her father's name, which really brings in that. Because the entire movie, Disney's been misrepresenting who the movie's about or who Mary Poppins is there to help. He keeps saying it's the children.
Mm-hmm.
And then Disney travels to London to basically give this, it's a very, very beautiful monologue from Mr. Hanks about understanding, because he talks about how he had a bad childhood and he finds healing in the art Disney makes, and he finally understands that Mary Poppins is there to save the dad.
Yeah.
And it's cool, that moment where I was like, wow, this is like a really beautiful moment. For them.
Do you think it was supposed to be a reveal to the audience that she was actually one of the kids?
Kind of. Maybe.
I felt like they kind of were like setting that up, even though it felt so glaringly obvious from the beginning.
Yeah.
But
I don't think they focus on it. I mean, they at the beginning, but then they don't really, for at least my recollection, I don't remember a lot of talk later about it. I think the reveal was more the surprise that Mr. Banks is the father figure, or Mr. Banks is the Mary Poppins is there for Mr. Banks,
and that Mary Poppins is like not some any sort of like magical nanny. She's like literally just like a sister or something, like someone who comes in, yeah, who's like totally normal but had this like huge impact on them.
Because in the past we've learned sort of at this moment too that the nanny that came to her house was she viewed her as a kid as magical because she was the nurse who was trying to save her father and couldn't. The father does pass away, and that's sort of, you know, more emotional trauma on top of it all. So in Mary Poppins' timeline, the father gets to live on, but in real life, her father passed away from, I think, tuberculosis?
Yeah, or cirrhosis of the liver. A whole big mess of things. Also, the mom at one point almost, like, drowns herself in the lake. Or like, that was so traumatic. That poor... I don't know how true any of this P.L. Travers stuff is. I've read that it's been...
Yeah.
It was, like, highly editorialized.
Yeah. I'll actually get into that when we... If we can wrap... We'll go to the end of the movie, and then I did a lot of research on
good.
What was true and what was not true.
Yeah. So, the movie wraps up. The movie gets made.
Yeah, she ends up giving him the rights.
She gives him the rights, and she doesn't get invited to the premiere, which is, like, so shitty of Walt Disney.
And they try to pin it, like, oh, she wouldn't want to come.
That's just so, that's so gross. That's, like, ugh, didn't like that.
Yeah, I think he says she'll come to the London premiere or something.
And they said something like, there's going to be press there, there's going to be cameras.
Yeah.
We can't afford her to, like, trash talk.
They're literally silencing this woman.
We love to see it. And then she ends up, like, crying during the movie because she sees her dad or something. I don't remember what part she cries at. Probably the Let's Go Fly a Kite.
Yeah, I think it's the George Banks' is like, redemption arc.
Yeah.
Kind of breaks her in the theater.
And then
it's like a happy, beautiful little ending.
And they wrap the movie up, like, the credits have actual drawings that happened. Like, in the movie, there's a scene where one of the songwriters, like, draws a picture of P.L. Travers, like, saying no to everything. And they show that actual sketch that actually happened. There's, like, photos of them at the premiere with Julie Andrews, my queen, and all sorts of little gems like that. I left overall feeling with a very, sorry, that was a weird way to start a sentence. When I finished the movie, I was very emotional. It did exactly what it was trying to do. It made me cry a little. And I felt very positively and warmly towards this movie.
This is exciting because this is, we finally are sort of getting what we want.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like this movie.
I could kind of tell.
It makes me mad.
Why?
I don't hate it. Part of it, I will say, part of my bias is I read what the discrepancies between the movie and real life were before I watched it. So as I watched it, I was like, well, how could I do this?
Okay. Which...
So, well, I'll start with just the basic, which is fine. I get why you change stuff to be more exciting. But in real life, Disney had the rights to the movie before she was brought on board. But she did have script approval rights. But... They had the rights when she came to work with the staff.
Okay.
And then Disney, it was actually said that Disney left to go on vacation to Palm Springs a few days into her visit and wasn't at the studio when several of the film's biggest scenes were sort of put together. And so the dialogue scenes between her and Disney are adapted from letters, which I actually thought that was kind of interesting. Some things that were different that I thought was fascinating that they left out for reasons I get, but in real life, she was a mother. She adopted a son when she was 40, which I thought was interesting because the movie doesn't talk about that at all. But it was a twin, and she did not adopt his twin.
What?
And the twins ran into each other at a pub in the UK, and they discussed their mothers, because they were each brought up thinking they were the only one, which I thought was kind of interesting.
What?
So, and the movie sort of presents Travers as, like, this kind of odd, quirky, like, unloving person. And this article says she could have been, but she raised a child, and a child from whom she was estranged when she finally agreed to Walt Disney's year-long attempt to adapt Mary Poppins, which is sort of interesting. She was never married, but there was a New Yorker piece that talked about that she had male and female partners. Oh. Again, those aren't really affected to the story, but the biggest thread from the story is the premiere. It is written in history that she did cry at the premiere, but not because she liked the movie. It says in the film, Emma Thompson weeps at the Mary Poppins premiere, overcome with apparent relief and feeling, finally, that she had some kind of closure on the death of her father. Okay. This is not accurate. From her biography, it says, this biography is called Mary Poppins, she wrote The Life of P.L. Travers. It says, during the premiere, Pamela, which is her real name, cried to the embarrassment of Disney and his staff. It was such a shock. That name on the screen, Mary Poppins, so sudden it hardly mattered. Then that her name was in such small type, listed as a consultant at first, then in the line based on the stories of P.L. Travers. Then she, from a letter she wrote for the New Yorker, the premiere was the first, or this was her describing the thing for the New Yorker. The premiere was the first Travers had seen of the movie. She did not initially receive an invitation, but had embarrassed a Disney executive into extending one. And it was a shock. Afterwards, as Richard Sherman, who Jason Schwartzman played in the movie, recalled, she tracked down Disney at the after party, which was being held at a giant white tent in the parking lot adjoining the Chinese theater. Well, she said loudly, the first thing that has to go is the animated sequence. Disney looked at her coolly. Pamela, he replied, that ship has sailed. The ship has sailed. And then in a 1994 interview, she said, my father died when I was 7. I was his favorite child. And he was my beloved father. I brought him along with me all through my life. Every elderly man has a bit of my father in me. So this weird. I think the movie really wants to wrap up that this was a relationship that worked out. It was a nice, like, you know, they found a way to work together. And the end result, they all liked it. But in reality, that does not seem to be the case. Not as when I had initially heard stuff about this movie, I thought it was going to be like night and day. Like she tried to get it canceled and this and that, but for the most part it was just sort of things that make Disney look like a pat on the back versus, you know, getting into his character.
Yeah, it's not really as like heartwarming of a story with the knowledge that she was ultimately unhappy with the final product, and also that they kind of like did her super dirty by like crediting her as a consultant rather than like, I guess, like what else would they credit her as? Who knows?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the movie suggests, like, a co-writer, because she seems to be there through every script meeting, but, yeah. So I guess for me, it's not fair to say I hated it. I think it's an effective movie, and at times very charming, but it's sort of kind of takes that revisionist history thing, and having it be about Disney, patting Disney on the back, plays a little weird to me.
Okay.
But I don't know. I think it also, for the most part, if you had no knowledge of that, it's a pretty safe and emotionally satisfying story about sort of this woman who overcomes these odds for herself to, you know, make peace with her memory of her father.
Mm-hmm. I will say, the character of P.L. Travers in this movie was very appealing to me because I like that I hated her at first. That was like a fun experience as a viewer. Because at first I'm like, is there anything redeemable about this woman? Like, she fucking sucks. Her attitude is so bad. And then you just like kind of get some understanding of this woman with just like an incredibly, who knows how many liberties they took with the story of her past and of her father and her mother and the pears and all that. But she's much more complex, I think, than at first meets the eye. And I can imagine that a woman like her would be a little hardened. I'm going to choose to not know anything else about her, like adopting half of a set of twins, which is hard to find any understanding for.
Yeah, I almost want to like read more into that and sort of see if there's if she ever talks about any of her decisions with that or her reasoning behind it.
We find out that she also wrote The Parent Trap, and she had ultimate script approval of The Parent Trap. The movie is just so palatable, and it's something that I've been talking to with my dad in particular, and then other people that I've been... I don't know about you, but during this quarantine, I've been really only drawn to movies that I've seen before, mm-hmm. or movies that are just, like, easy and palatable. So this movie was great, because it was, like, I knew it was going to happen the whole time. Like, you can predict the story arc if you just keep your eye on a few clues, or if you know anything about just, like, storytelling. It's just fun, and it's sweet, and Walt Disney's in it, and Tom Hanks is in it, and, like, what a role for him to just get to play such an iconic, like, figure. So I found it very comforting. It was just, like, a cozy little blanket. The movie was just, like, easy to watch, and I appreciated it for that. I don't think it deserves to win any, like, awards. It's just, like, a easy... When did this movie come out? Christmas, probably?
Let me see here. It came out... December 13th of 2013.
Yeah. So this is like a movie you go see with your family in the movie theater during that long, 17-week period.
I do think the cast is really good. I also like the idea, at its core, it's sort of about creative people and the redemption arc that, you know, the through line for artists that create and sort of the redemption that we have for ourselves, but also with our past mm-hmm. to sort of make it's got an interesting kind of appropriate case about mental health. It doesn't really talk about it directly, but this idea that sometimes you can't just live with everything haunting you. There's this chance to deal with it, and you'll find your ways to deal with it in your own time.
Yeah. And how great how this woman really could have just benefited if she'd just seen a therapist at any point in her life. Probably would have helped heal a lot of the things that seemed to still be bothering her at the onset of the film. Becomes a PSA about mental health. But overall, it seems like you kind of thought the movie was a little uninspired.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Fine. I don't think it's a bad movie. I don't hate it. I just think it's fine.
Okay.
That's mine, which is boring, but I'm sorry.
I get it, man.
I gotta be honest.
So what do you want to do our big famous segment?
You have to bring it home.
All right. So on today's Hank's Happenings.
Hey,
way to sync it up. lots and lots of Tom Hanks news. First of all, Tom Hanks was the first celebrity to be diagnosed with the coronavirus, which was a brand new level of devastating that I really was unable... I actually cried about it, which is sad.
It's a dark timeline.
A lot of people messaged me. Like, people were like, hey, are you okay? Because I also, to be fair, the day before I had posted an entire series of photos about how hot Kevin Costner is, and I had really strayed from the light that is Tom Hanks. So I do take some responsibility for him having coronavirus. Thankfully, it is now many weeks past this. Tom Hanks is recovering. He's back in America with Rita. That was a crazy news cycle. That was like...
But his updates, I mean, in the optimist in me says, awful that he got it, but the beautiful part of it is getting little updates from Tom Hanks that everything's going to be okay, guys. Let's stay and let's do our part. Everyone who doesn't listen, isn't listening after Tom Hanks has given you this America's Dad gave you these beautiful, simple instructions. I don't know what to say for you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Oh God, I have a lot of thoughts about society in general about that. But we also got some really cool content from Tom. He hosted the all like, how do you even say the episode of Saturday Night Live was like recorded? Like it's not a digital.
It's like the first. Everyone made sketches from their home, so it's not live, but
yeah.
All through Zoom?
Yeah, which is so cool. And Tom Hanks was the host, so he did a monologue. I already looked it up. It was a
surprise.
It was a surprise. They didn't promote it, which was very juicy. A lot of people were DMing me about it. I was very upset because I had scheduled a Zoom happy hour with my friends, so I wasn't able to watch it as it was happening. But I got to watch it the next day. What a treat. He is great. They also didn't record that at his house. I already looked this up because that kitchen seemed very small to be like Tom Hanks' kitchen. It was the kitchen at the Playtone offices, which is his production company. So.
Interesting. He was great. I had what a lovely little treat. Mm-hmm.
I also saw he was on an episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that I haven't listened to yet, and he... I think did some kind of something with him and Rita did something with Oprah. I think a podcast or some digital. Oh,
wow. No, I haven't listened to those either. I was going through my Twitter when the news of his corona was announced, and it's mostly just me in all caps typing, take me instead. just ranting about corona that it's put, take me instead, you cowards. and then I don't post for a week. So,
who knows? Maybe you didn't get taken.
Maybe it worked.
I was so legitimately upset about that because that was also early enough in the experience where it was like, I have an anxiety disorder. I've talked about it openly. I have panic attacks pretty regularly. It's just like part of my life. So something like the coronavirus, really, this is like what I was born to worry about is something like this. So I've been worried about it for weeks at the point when this news was breaking, and this is like finally when it became like serious, because that same day is when they like shut down the NBA and Disneyland shut down. I'm doing that hipster thing like I was worried about it before it was cool. That's not the case. This is like, I feel like that was the day that it all shifted, though. That's when
it became real.
Yeah, and I think actually Tom Hanks having it was probably a huge part of that.
Yeah, I think that people needed someone that is sort of unproblematic and relatable to sort of see not only it start to happen to someone that's notable, but also to see how they react to it and sort of what they have to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Truly nuts.
Bizarre. It's absolutely wild.
Very happy that he recovered. Same with Rita. Very happy that they're safe.
Also, very happy that Chet did his... shirtless update video.
What do you have thoughts on Chet? I kind of love him.
Yeah, he's there's a chaotic energy there, and I respect it.
Yeah,
he is a lot like my brother, and so
okay,
I get it. I like understand that vibe.
Yeah, there's something endearing about it. All right, so what is our next movie?
Oh. asking the big
questions. I always surprise you with this question somehow.
You know, I've had years at this point to be ready.
To just memorize the
You think.
What would it be called?
Oh, I also should say, it doesn't necessarily have Tom Hanks in the actual video, but the Wonders from That Thing You Do got together and did a video performing That Thing You Do.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, for the sad part of that, Adam Schlesinger, who is the songwriter for Fountains of Wayne, a band that I was obsessed with growing up.
Stacey's mom.
So yeah, Stacey's mom. That album that's from Welcome Interstate Managers is perfect. It's incredible. He also is one of the most talented pop musicians, writers, and he wrote That Thing You Do. The song That Thing You Do. He wrote songs for Josie and the Pussycats.
I love that movie.
His list is pretty insane, but he passed away during coronavirus as well. Mm-hmm. And Tom Hanks talked about that, but they did this That Thing You Do tribute to him. It was really lovely. Because he, and I think Tom Hanks tweeted about him talking about it, that Thing You Do works is what it is because of him. And he tweeted he was a wonder as well.
Aww.
I thought that was very cute.
Wow.
Our next movie is Bridge of Spies.
Ooh.
We're rounding out. This is a important one because this was the first Tom Hanks movie we saw in theaters together.
It's very special. That's weird. That feels like a chapter is ending.
We have caught, well, we haven't caught up, but we have caught up to where we met in real life.
That's nuts, dude.
So, next time on Talkin' Tom, Bridge of Spies, directed, reuniting Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks.
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Daniel?
I don't think so. I'm doing another podcast. I work with an organization called Secret Movie Club. I'm the COO, actually. We are currently on hiatus because of the corona and lockdown. So we're doing online streaming parties for movies. But we're also doing a podcast. So there's a Secret Movie Club podcast if you like movie stuff. We've done Indiana Jones trilogy. Mm-hmm. We did The Matrix that's coming out this Friday. And this weekend, if you're listening live, if you're listening on April 22nd, when this podcast is released, we're doing Evil Dead, Sam Raimi's original Evil Dead, as a Netflix watch party. And that's it. Besides that, I'm just playing Animal Crossing, so if you have great turnip prices, let me know.
I'm so jealous. I can't find a Switch anywhere.
I will find you a Switch.
Okay.
They've gotta be I think the people need them.
They do need them. The Funzu ones that I've found are, like, jacked up to, like, $600 a piece or some, like, crazy price gouging.
Oh, thank you. That's stupid. I hate everything.
Well, Daniel, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day. And for the people listening out there, if you're interested in joining the conversation, we have a Facebook group that is locked because they think we're impersonating Tom Hanks. So don't check that out.
We're going to get it unlocked.
But we've got was that?
I like that Facebook, without investigating it, just from the get-go, is like that. Yep, they're saying they're Tom Hanks.
Yeah, this group, this Facebook group with like 6 people in it is really fooling a lot of people.
Yeah.
We got that. We got Instagram. We got Twitter. All that good stuff. I've got nothing but time. I should be updating all of those, but we'll see. I'm on Instagram and Twitter and all that. You are too, Daniel. Well, I'll link our socials on the website.
Yay!
Go listen to...
Any exciting places we can find you?
No.
Besides those? Okay, fine.
No, that's it. You okay. Can look up for the cat that I'm fostering. Will be available for adoption soon.
Oh.
You want a little snuggly, sweetie cat. All right. I'm Josie.
I'm Daniel.
Thanks for listening.
I have no idea if that... I'll sync that one up. I can do
Thank
that.
Thank you for your service. Okay, and stop recording.